With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
On this episode of Sports Illustrated Weekly, the Netflix show Cheer took viewers inside the world of competitive cheerleading and made stars out of its athletes and coaches. Our producer, Jess Yarmosky, sits down with the queen of cheer, Monica Aldama, to discuss winning her latest national championship and the sport's explosion in popularity. And later, MLB teams are using the shift more than ever. SI writer Emma Bocellari explains why that is, why the shift is so effective, and why baseball is changing the rules next season. But first, the Kentucky Derby is this weekend, but one of the sport's most notable and notorious figures won't be there. Bob Baffert has had more than 30 of his horses fail drug tests and was subsequently banned from Churchill Downs for 2 years due to doping allegations. SI senior writer Pat Forty joins us to discuss the controversial horse trainer. It's Wednesday, May 4th. I'm your host, John Gonzalez. From Sports Illustrated and iHeartRadio, this is Sports Illustrated Weekly.
Heading to the finish in the Kentucky Derby, here's the wire! Bob Baffert does it again! Medina Spirit has won the Kentucky Derby!
I got some horrible news. Medina Spirit, our Derby horse, tested positive for betamethasone. I got the biggest gut punch in racing for something that I didn't do.
Churchill Downs cracking down, releasing a bombshell just after 4 o'clock today. The best-known name in the sport of horse racing is now suspended for 2 years from the Louisville track and others owned by Churchill Downs.
Messing with the run for the roses is considered a mortal sin in racing, and Baffert has done exactly that. Medina Spirit became just the second medication DQ in the history of America's oldest continuous sporting event. Even the biggest name and the most recognizable figure in the sport had to face this truth, as delivered by Churchill Downs. Nobody is bigger than the Kentucky Derby.
Pat Forty, welcome back to Sports Illustrated Weekly.
John, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Give us some background on Bob Baffert and his place in horse racing history.
You can make a convincing argument that Bob is the greatest trainer in the history of a very, very old sport. He's won 6 Kentucky Derbies, was 7 last year until the disqualification, which is the heart of the story. 16 Triple Crown races overall, and has established himself as the guy who's the big personality, gets the best horses, gets the richest owners, and finds his way into the winner's circle more than anyone in the big races.
So as you mentioned, 6 different Kentucky Derby winners, would have been 7. The Kentucky Derby is this weekend. Baffert will not be there. He was banned from Churchill Downs for at least 2 years.
Explain to everybody what happened for that to transpire.
Bob's erstwhile 2021 Kentucky Derby winner for a period of about a week, Medina Spirit, crossed the finish line first, but then failed a drug test for an excessive amount of betamethasone, which is a allowable substance, but on race day can only be at a certain level. And this horse had a medical overage of that level. And so he was disqualified. And this was the latest in a spate of very high profile positive drug tests for Baffert horses, including one in the 2020 Kentucky Oaks, which is the second biggest race that Churchill Downs puts on. So the Kentucky Derby is the most sacrosanct event in thoroughbred racing. And while there has been a, I think, alarming tolerance of medicating and possibly just outright cheating and drugging horses in thoroughbred racing, you don't mess with the Kentucky Derby. And he messed with it, and now he is facing a 2-year ban as a result.
Yeah, as you wrote in the piece, Churchill Downs is sacrosanct and it's considered off limits for these types of things. And yet Baffert was caught in violation, and Churchill Downs hasn't just banned him, right? They've removed imagery of him. You wrote that they've basically de-Baffertized the grounds.
Yeah, right. His barn 33 on the backside was the gathering spot for fans, for media, curious, onlookers. Every year, virtually, from 1997, when he first came to the Derby, actually 96 with Kevin Ear, through last year, he had an incredible run, and people flocked there, and he had a wall that was covered outside of the barn with, you know, plaques commemorating his Derby wins and his Triple Crown horses. He's had two of those. There's only been 13 in history. He's had the two most recent, American Pharoah in 2015 and Justify in 2018, and those plaques are all gone. That is now just a plain beige wall. The stalls of horses where he usually brought in a powerhouse squad with him from California for not just the Kentucky Derby, but other races in the spring in Churchill Downs, empty. There used to be a Baffert Lounge on the second floor grandstand at Churchill Downs. That's now the Ben Jones Lounge, which is the other trainer to have won six derbies. So I guess, John, you would say that this just has all the makings of a bad breakup or a bad divorce, wherein one couple threw all the other couples, one spouse threw the other spouse's belongings all out on the yard, basically, and said, get lost.
Yeah, I mean, these two were so symbiotic, Baffert and Churchill Downs, for so long. And yet, as you mentioned, Medina Spirit popping that positive wasn't a one-off incident. It was the fifth violation for Baffert in 13 months. So Churchill Downs bans him as a result. And Baffert does not take this well. He goes on Fox News and he rails against cancel culture in this unhinged rant.
We live in a different world now. This America's different. And it was like a cancel culture kind of a thing.
I'm wondering, though, how he's taking it lately. What did he and his lawyers have to tell you?
Well, his lawyers are still pretty bellicose. He's got a couple of guys who represent him, and they insist that he has been maligned, unfairly singled out, that they can come up with reasonable explanations for each of these medication overages, and that because Bob Baffert's a big name, they wanted to make an example of him. Baffert and Churchill Downs, it feels like it's gotten personal. So it's been an escalating war of words. And for Churchill, not just to ban him, but to basically scrub Baffert from the premises tells you how it feels. And Baffert will continue to, I think, to fight in any way possible. He has not laid down and accepted really any of the rulings that have gone against him. And he's lost several of them recently in court as he's tried to get in this ban overturned. I expect him to continue to be a thorn in the side of Churchill Downs until they let him back into to saddle horses.
But it's not just Churchill Downs accusing Baffert of this, right? I mean, none of these allegations are new. More than 30 horses have tested positive in the past, the combination of drugs. What other states and tracks have had these same sort of accusations leveled against Baffert?
Well, Baffert, he did have two big positive tests in 2020 in Arkansas at Hot Springs there with two high-level horses. And then also had one at Santa Anita, his home base in Southern California. So Yeah, these are things that have not just been, it's not just been a Churchill problem. Mm-hmm. It's been a Baffert problem, and it's followed him around the country. And it's interesting to see that some other tracks, even like he hasn't had a problem, a regulatory problem in New York, but New York has opted to try to ban Baffert as well from its racing there. And that obviously will take him out of the Belmont Stakes. He's not going to be able to race at the Preakness in Baltimore. So he's effectively out of this Triple Crown, and we'll see how long those tracks continue to try to exclude Bob Baffert from their races. Because, I mean, the races will go on without him, and people will still show up and bet. But if you want the casual fan to show any interest, you want Bob Baffert there. But he's got to be able to do it within the rules of the game.
Yeah, it feels like the controversy around Baffert really ramped up in December of 2021 when Medina Spirit died.
Santa Anita officials say Medina Spirit collapsed after a morning workout and died of a probable cardiac event. The veterinary team took blood, hair, and urine samples, which were sent to the California Horse Racing Board. A full necropsy.
And that really put the spotlight back on him, and not in a good way. He's had 74 horses die, not all race-related, but still it feels like a really big number. I'm wondering what people inside the horse racing community, other trainers, feel about Baffert's methods.
Well, that's a great question. And I'd say there's a split, because there's a lot of people that respect him, admire him, appreciate the way he's kind of elevated the profile of the sport at times. And a lot of them train the way he does, training your horses hard, or the way that he will build up to big races, or quite frankly, maybe even the way that horses are medicated. So there's a certain school among the trainers and other people in the thoroughbred industry who do not look at him as a pariah. And then there are others who absolutely do, and think that he has been getting away with a lot worse than what he's been caught with, even though there has not been evidence of that. But one of the big problems with horse racing is that most people have felt there is a common thread and undercurrent that the medications have been ahead of the testing for quite some time, somewhat similar to the way baseball used to be or the way Olympic sports are. And if the sport is that dirty top to bottom and he's that much better than everybody else, then there's a lot of people who think, okay, there's a reason why he's that much better than everybody else. It's not that he's an exalted trainer per se, although I don't think anybody doubts his horsemanship, but what makes him so much better? Well, maybe it's the same thing that made Lance Armstrong so much better in the Tour de France.
Yeah, that's a really great point that you bring up about the medications maybe being ahead of the testing. 2 years ago, the U.S. Attorney's Office charged 27 people with essentially an international doping scheme. And in it, they said that the standardized testing can't really detect these designer drugs. So do we think that like a lot more horses could be on performance enhancers that we don't know about?
Oh, I think they certainly have been. And whether that federal crackdown changes that or not, I don't know. And again, I'm not sitting here saying Bob Baffert drugged his horses or so-and-so drugged their horses. Now, the people that were caught in that federal sting, yeah, there's proof that they did it. But is there a belief? Yeah, that there's been a lot of designer drugs going around at racetracks, and that horses have been ramped up on those for quite a while. Yes, there is.
Baffert is obviously the biggest example of this problem within horse racing, but he's not the exception, right? I mean, he's sort of the rule.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that there are plenty of people out there who believe that that's just kind of one of the things that you have had to do over the last couple of decades to succeed in thoroughbred racing. Is, you know, if your competitors are medicating their horses with whatever the substance is, you better find a way to do it as well. So the guys who have been caught in this sting are not necessarily the only people perpetrating under the table medication. Just the way in the FBI scandal in college basketball, they caught some, but everybody else was doing it as well.
We're spending a lot of time here talking about Baffert and these other trainers and the people that are involved in it, but I'm wondering about the actual animals and the impact on their health and their lifespan and who's watching out for them.
Well, I mean, that's a huge question. And it's been one of the, I think, real lightning rod topics in horse racing is, you know, are these animals basically being abused? Are they being drugged just so they can run and then be sold quickly for breeding rights, and their health and longevity is compromised in that way. And one of the big problems in the sport is that these are three-year-olds that compete for the Triple Crown. Three is a young age for a horse. They are pushed hard to be ready at basically a premature age. What's the stress level of that? What's the impact? How many get injured? It's a pretty shocking number how many horses that if you push them towards the Kentucky Derby and the Triple Crown, either don't race again or are never the same again. Trainer Chad Brown, who actually has a favorite in this year's Derby, said, you know, that there is often a price to be paid for taking a big swing at the Kentucky Derby, and that's your horses just may not recover from being pushed that hard that early.
Yeah, Baffert took a lot of big swings, as you mentioned, and he was basically held up as a legend in the sport and now has had this fall from grace. How do people who maybe used to exalt Bob Baffert think about him now? I mean, what's the overarching thought on Bob Baffert in the sport?
I think there's a lot of disappointment, disillusionment, anger even. I'm a guy, I'll be honest, I had a great relationship with Bob. Haven't spoken to him for a while now, but he was incredibly media friendly. He was available. He was glib. He was funny. You deal with enough football and basketball coaches who are paranoid and standoffish, and then you go to the racetrack and it's like, hey, the rock star of the sport is like, yeah, come on by anytime. You know, what do you need? Da, da, da. You know, and talk to him for an hour. So you like those kind of people in our business.
Yeah.
But that doesn't necessarily mean they're doing everything the way they're supposed to be doing them. And so, you know, I think that there were a lot of people, and I'd probably put myself in this boat, that was like, you kind of wondered and you were like, is this all legitimate? And then these tests keep popping up. And finally, it's like, you know what? You may have an excuse for all of them, but the cumulative effect is it's just not believable. It's not believable that you aren't improperly medicating your horses.
So what happens with him now moving forward? Because I think a lot of people, if they were subjected to this kind of scrutiny and they had this fall from grace, maybe they would go away. But it seems from your reporting that he has designs on staying in the sport, right?
Absolutely. He's still got some deep pocket owners who believe in him and know that he can get their horses to the top level. In April, he bought a $2.3 million two-year-old with Amr Zidane, who is the owner of Medina Spirit. And the owner of Taba in this year's Kentucky Derby, which had been Baffert's barn. And so, you know, the belief is, you know, you don't spend that kind of money on horses to see if they're going to be okay in the sixth race at Aqueduct. You're just taking a swing at the big races. And so if Baffert's going to continue to have that clientele and continue to be able to spend that kind of money on good horses, I expect that he will certainly attempt to be in the game and at the top of the game for years to come.
He's got the money, he's taken those swings, but he's still suspended from the Kentucky Derby for 2 years. Do you think we'll see him back there again?
I think he has every intention of being back there. And if Churchill Downs' two-year ban runs out, I don't think they would have much recourse to keep him from coming back. So I would expect in 2024, Bob Baffert on the first Saturday in May is saddling a horse at Churchill Downs to compete in the Derby. And there will be some gritting of teeth from people at Churchill Downs Incorporated.
All right, so Baffert is out, but then that leaves somebody in his place. Tell us about his assistant and the lottery ticket he told you about.
Yeah, fascinating wrinkle there that while Bob Baffert is out, his horses are in.
Right.
Messier and Taba, two of his star three-year-olds that finished 1-2 in the San Anita Derby, they were transferred out of Baffert's barn in March when it became clear that he had exhausted all his legal options to try to get into the Derby. And they were given to Tim Yakteen, who had been a former Baffert assistant, as a really a pretty low-profile trainer, like a guy who's never been to the Derby and really never been close to the Derby. He's had some decent horses, but this is a guy who's never really operated at that level. And now all of a sudden, he inherits two incredibly talented horses. They run 1-2 in Santa Anita, and they're going to the Derby, and they're going to be, you know, among the five or six horses that have a chance to win this thing, most people think. And Yakteen, he's an interesting guy. Friendly, but by no means ready for this spotlight at all. He's never had any spotlight on him in his life. And so he's kind of dealing with this, and he did have a great quote about it where he said that he felt like a lottery ticket fell in his lap, and he's just trying to get to the window to cash it. And I think that that's kind of where he is. It's an incredible opportunity, but also a lot of pressure that comes with this spot.
This is quite a story. You can read his excellent piece about Bob Baffert and horse racing on SI.com, and we'll link to it in our show notes. Pat Forty, as always, great work. Thanks for this.
Thank you, John.
After a break, we look at the world of competitive cheerleading and the Netflix show that made the sport explode in popularity.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
This is Colin Cowherd from The Herd with Colin Cowherd. Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home service marketplace. They're here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big, small, indoor, outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled pros to get the job done well.
Listen, I've got a couple of things in a bathroom in my house. Got to get it fixed. I don't have time, and I'm not good at it. Angie is. With just a few taps on the app, you can have Angie tackle your home service project start to finish.
With over 200,000 pros in their network, Angie makes it easy to research, compare, and hire pros to ensure a job done well. With 29 years of experience combined with new digital tools to simplify the process, Angie makes completing home projects really easy. It's your one-stop shop. Angie can help you find the best price for your project by comparing quotes from multiple pros in just a few taps or book services at an upfront price based on local data. They get the difficulties that can come with home projects. They get it. Why not make it as simple as possible? Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com or download the app today.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Won the grand championship several times. They could beat anybody.
People from all over the country come here to cheer for Monica.
Navarro, where is it located?
Zoom in. Where? I guess I'm going there.
My goal was to be the best cheer program in the country.
On January 8th, 2020, Netflix released the docuseries Cheer, which made stars out of the Navarro College cheerleading team and its coach, Monica Aldama.
First of all, none of us had a clue that this show would be popular. I mean, it is cheerleading, and cheerleading does have a bad rap. It has a stereotype of, you know, this typical mean girl, little popular person that's just trying to look cute. And that's not what cheerleading has become at all.
Last month, Monica Aldama and her team won their second national championship in 3 years and their 15th overall.
And our Advanced Large Co-Ed Junior College national champions with a 99.21. Let's hear from Navarro College!
It was redemption for Navarro. They won the NCAA College Nationals in 2019, which was documented on the first season of Cheer. In 2020, their championship was canceled due to COVID, and in 2021, their rival, Trinity Valley Community College, took back the crown, which was seen on the second season of Cheer. Our producer, Jesse Armosky, has watched the show more times than she'd like to admit. She sat down with Monica Aldama to discuss her latest national championship. Here's Jess with the Queen of Cheer.
Monica, first, congratulations on winning your 15th title. That is amazing. How does this one feel different from the others?
The first one was amazing. We'd never done it before, and there were zero expectations from anyone. But the more you win, the more people think you should win. And so I think over the years, there's been a tremendous amount of pressure on myself that I put on myself. Because I don't want to disappoint anyone. I don't want to disappoint the school or the community or our alumni or anyone. And then, of course, Cheer came out and the whole world became invested in what we were doing. So it was the pressure that I already had times a million. Mm-hmm. And coming off such a tough year last year, I think that I just felt so much relief after we went out there and did our job. I mean, I knew that we had put in the work. I knew that we were ready. And that's the only thing that I know that I can do every year is go and have zero regrets that as their coach, I just need to know that I've done everything that I can to prepare them and get them ready. And I knew I had done that. It's already a very difficult thing to execute. Our job is to make it look easy, so hopefully we do that. But it's not easy at all. It takes a lot of practice, a lot of hours. So to take all of that and then throw it outside in the sun, the heat, and the wind, I mean, it's any given Sunday. You don't know what's going to happen.
And from somebody who's just sitting on my couch under a blanket watching you, you do make it look easy, I have to say. But I do have to ask, like, I can barely watch your routines. Like, I get so nervous that I sit there, like, with my hands over my eyes. Same thing happened when I watched the live stream of 2022. And you're there at the edge of the stage, and you're knowing it's, you know, it could be a fluke, but, like, 1 millimeter off, and things could just go south. I mean, how do you breathe? And every time a stunt goes up successfully, are you just like, yay, celebrating? And then you're like, on to the next one? Or like, what is going through your mind there? Like, you must be so nervous.
Oh, so nervous. And I can't show it, you know, as the coach, I can't show it. So I just, whew. But yeah, I don't watch it for entertainment. I'm strictly looking. I'm looking when they're tumbling, I'm looking at their feet. Did they land on their feet? Are they all together? Did the stunts go up? It's like I'm just checking off the boxes as they complete the skills. And then, like I said, but it's building up. It's this energy that builds up. And as they're checking off more and more boxes, you're like, okay, we're doing it. We're doing it. You know,
yeah.
It's exciting. Yeah. It's scary. It's exciting. It's an emotion that is just out of this world. We did the hardest routine this year. We really tried to push, you know, when you lose, it really pushes you. I mean, we always push ourselves, but coming off of a year that we had lost, the determination in these kids was just every day. There was no question that we were going to work our butts off, you know, every single day in the gym. No complaints. I love pyramids. So that's that part where there's multiple people holding. And I, that's kind of one of the things that I love to choreograph. I love visual. I love it to look like a circus. And so I had a lot of sleepless nights where I was thinking about the pyramid and what we were going to do. And there's no motivation like losing. And yeah, we just put everything we had into it.
And for listeners at home, the pyramid is like 3 levels of people, I think. And then you have one, Gabby, I think it was, back handspringing up to the top of the pyramid. Gotta watch it. It's insane. Cheer is kind of this niche sport, or at least it was for most people. For you, obviously, it's been your life. But it exploded in popularity with the show.
So when I was approached many years ago about doing Cheer, I'm actually a very private person. I would never want cameras in my face or anything like that. I was just proud of my team and I wanted to highlight them. I mean, I didn't go to college to coach cheerleading. I thought I would be on Wall Street running some big company. And this just kind of fell in my lap. And even then, I was super young. I was 22 years old when I started here. So I thought, I'll just do this until I figure out what I want to do. And then year 28 and I'm still here.
So it's already pretty improbable that you're here, you know, coaching this team. And it's even more improbable, it seems, that suddenly this film crew shows up and says, we're going to make a show about cheerleading. And suddenly it's one of the world's most popular shows.
When Greg Whiteley, who created Cheer, when they came out here, I don't think they even had a clue what they were going to be filming. They just kind of were intrigued on some cheerleaders that they had seen filming Last Chance U. And it's so funny because you said it's scary to watch that the crew was terrified for the first week. It was hilarious. Oh, they screamed. They were just, you know, like, and then they got used to it and they were like, okay, it's even more impressive in person. If you watch it, it's like, wow, you know, but they got to see the behind the scenes too. So they saw the falls and it took them about a week to be like, okay, I can do this. Greg said in an interview that these were the most athletic kids he had ever filmed. And that says a lot.
So spoiler alert to any listeners who have yet to finish Cheer season 2, but you guys did not win the 2021 championship. And I will never forget a scene that stood out to me was you walking off the mat with your arm around Jillian Rupert.
Come on, Jill. Good. Good job. Sorry. It was fine.
Jillian had fallen. She's one of the flyers and she'd fallen during the routine. And I just remember thinking, you really seemed to be the coach that she needed at that point. And I just want to know, what were you thinking? What was that moment like for you?
Well, you know, I was trying to process it because it wasn't a huge mistake, but I know cheerleading and I know if you make a mistake, you're going to get hit really hard for that mistake. And so I knew that that did probably cost us. It wasn't in the actual stunt. It was in the transition of the stunt and something that it was very flukish. Like it never had happened at practice. We still don't to this day. We watch it and we're like, what happened? We don't know. What I do know is that the guilt that these kids can carry with them forever over knowing that if we would have hit, we would have won. We had hit the day before. We were in first place. But I knew. I was like, this has probably cost us the national championship. And I just know how much that can really stay with someone. And I did not want her to feel that guilt. And, you know, she's got death threats. It's crazy.
Oh my
and
gosh.
Yes. Once the show came out, some of the things that people have DM'd her or commented on her about, it was your fault. And just people are really mean and nasty. But the good thing is the team has lifted her up, you know, even then. And it didn't show poor Alex, but her partner. I consoled him for a good 30 minutes. He cried like I had not. I mean, I just, as a parent, I just can't imagine that weight that my child would have to carry. And I didn't want them to feel that, you know, and the team was very supportive. And then this year we've just kind of laughed about it. So I think it was great this year for a little bit of a redemption for her and Alex to just get some of that weight off of them, you know, from last year.
This show really, and your division is really the perfect setup for a championship storyline. You have these two schools, you have this big rivalry, and then you have these flip-flopping teams. Was you guys, 2021 was them. Now you have it back in 2022. Can you just take us through the rivalry with Navarro and Trinity Valley Community College? What's it mean to the communities and what's it been like?
You know, I think it's so intriguing because we are so close to each other. Two small junior colleges that are 35 minutes from each other just down the road. And so we play each other in all sports. You know, we play each other in football. We play each other in basketball, volleyball. So it's a unique situation. When I came here, so I started here at the college back in 1995. and we had never won before, and Trinity Valley was the team to beat. So then obviously once we won, it was kind of like, wait a minute, now we have some competition and we're so close to each other. So I think that's probably when the, you know, the rivalry kind of started growing, because they finally had some competition and we were so close, and we were just battling back and forth. We're battling for recruits. We're battling for national championships. We're battling in all the different sports. It's a very unique situation.
I think some viewers were like, wait, there's only two teams in your division at nationals? And that's almost by design, right? Because I watched almost every routine in the 2022 nationals. And I mean, my humble opinion is that your two schools, I mean, above and beyond the competition. So how really did two junior colleges in Texas, you guys are in my opinion, competing at a higher level than some of the D1 schools. How does that work?
Thank you for bringing that up, first of all, because I get some very hateful comments, you know, like, wow, good job, two teams, you know, and they don't get it. And the thing about it is when we go out there to have the highest score of the entire competition, because we want to be able to say, no, we didn't just beat one team. We're like really good. You know, we have scored the highest score of the entire competition 6 times out of all our 15 national championships. And this year, including, we had beat every team there. We beat their score and we set another record.
You seem to kind of undergo this transformation, you and the whole team, between seasons 1 and 2. It's almost like overnight fame just knocked down your door. And given the success of the show, right, that's not surprising. But what was it like? I mean, you said you were a private person. What was it like to sort of wake up one morning and have the entire world paying attention? What was that like for you and for the team?
It was interesting, to say the least. I mean, to see people perceive me in all different ways, because I got so many things from that I was crazy to this, and some people love me. And that was a little bit of a shock to my system. I had to learn how to deal with it. This is the season of blocking. I never blocked anybody in 2020. I just let them attack me. I'd let them attack me in 2021. And this year I was like, you know what? This is my personal space. This is my social media. Do not come over to my space and say these horrible things. So I just started blocking people, and it's never felt so good. But, you know, as far as the team goes, I mean, it was really wild, because the campus, we had to cover our windows. We had people in the gym. We would have people filming us through the windows, busloads of people stopping every single day. The amount of people on campus every single day, it was a little bit out of control. So we tried to put some parameters up and try to add a little bit more security. But you know, when we were in practice, I know there was a lot of talk in the media that year, like, oh, they're going to lose their focus. They're not going to do well in Daytona, all this attention, and they're going to Ellen and they're going to New York. And that wasn't it at all. We were just so determined to prove everyone wrong about losing our focus. So yes, it was probably a big adjustment for a lot of them to get used to. But when it came to practice and our goals for Daytona, that was in a bubble that we were protecting.
And that has to be so hard, because, you know, I maybe it was sort of unfavorable editing in season 2, but it did seem like you guys were going through some things.
Sometimes we think Monica is like this alien superhero woman who can take on anything, and we have to remember that she's human.
So frustrating.
It's almost like, you know, that year of bad luck.
I mean, over a year.
You know, I don't know if she broke a mirror 7 years ago or something, but it's just like she has just had really just bad luck.
She's going to have days that, just like we do, that you're going to be like, is this even worth it?
You had COVID. You had the Jerry Harris news that came out.
Jerry Harris won the hearts of fans with his famous Matt Talks. Come on, y'all! But now Harris is under arrest, appearing in court Thursday, accused of repeatedly asking a 13-year-old to produce sexually explicit videos and photographs of himself.
So suddenly it seemed like season 2 was kind of almost less a show about cheerleading and more a show about a group of people just sort of trying to adapt to this instant fame.
Yeah, well, it was a tough 2 years. That was reality. We were overwhelmed. I was working 14-hour days minimum. I was not sleeping, and I didn't even know to expect this. And yes, we had a very tough couple of years, and I think you saw a lot of sadness in my face. I watched it, and I was like, geez, I was really going through it. The Jerry stuff just tore me down, and then the fallout that I had with Ladarius, like, that just hurt my heart. And so I was really struggling. Yeah, it was just a really tough couple of years, but it wasn't, it was everything. It was just like spiraling, you know, and this year's been so great because I finally, you know, we're in a better place and healed from a lot of that and, you know, gotten ourselves in a better situation. So
obviously you're on a podcast for Sports Illustrated and I've obviously heard this before that, oh, cheerleading's not a sport. It doesn't count. I mean, what would you say to those naysayers who are like, nah, this isn't that athletic?
I've never been offended when people say it's not a sport because I'm like, okay, well, to each his own. I don't care. But if you say they're not athletic, that's where I will become offended because, and I think when cheer came out, that's where people were like, whoa, these people are not just athletic. They're probably more athletic than most of the, you know, people that I know. The athleticism that it takes to compete a routine that we do. And obviously there's a lot of routines that are easier, but what we do and we're pushing ourselves and going full out, the term full out means we're doing our routine with all of the skills executed. It's like running as fast as you can for 2 minutes and 15 seconds. And it doesn't sound like that might be that hard, but go try it and just
see,
because you don't really have a moment to breathe yet. We're expecting you to throw people up and catch them and flip your bodies and do all these crazy things without a moment to breathe because our routines are very fast paced. I'm not one to go, oh, you don't think it's a sport? Well, that's fine. I get it. But if you say these kids are not athletic, then we're going to have a whole conversation.
You're about to reinvent the sport again this summer with this cheer tour. Cheerleaders from Navarro and TVCC. What is the cheer tour? What's it going to look like?
So it is going to be a 90-minute live show. We hope to make you laugh, cry, on your feet, feel all the emotions. It's going to be great. I mean, just, you know, just like if you go watch Cirque du Soleil or any of those shows and you get to, you know, see some amazing things, but you also laugh and you also get this journey and this storytelling. We just have some of the best athletes in the country coming together to entertain you through amazing cheerleading. It's going to be epic. It's going to be, it's really exciting.
Monica Aldama, you are royalty, the queen of cheer. Thank you so much for being here.
After a break, why MLB teams are using the shift more than ever, and whether baseball's pending push to limit it is a good idea.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my! Look at that! He is! And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
This is Colin Cowherd from The Herd with Colin Cowherd. Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home service marketplace. They're here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big, small, indoor, outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled pros to get the job done well.
Listen, I've got a couple of things in the bathroom in my house. Got to get it fixed. I don't have time, and I'm not good at it. Angie is.
In just a few taps in the Angie app or clicks on the site, you can have Angie tackle your home service projects start to finish. With over 200,000 pros in their network, Angie makes it easy to research, compare, and hire pros to ensure a job done well.
With 29 years of experience combined with new digital tools to simplify the process, Angie makes completing home projects really easy. Renters, you can use Angie too for moving, installations, or cleaning. Angie can even help with extremely specific projects. Just tell them what you need, and Angie will find the right solution for you. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com. Or download the app today.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
We offered a procedural agreement that would allow for the timely implementation of sorely needed rules like the pitch timer and the elimination of shifts to improve the entertainment value of the game on the field.
Are we really going to ban the shift?
I don't want to see a guy look at a piece of paper and then walk three paces to the right and then it's hit right at him. I'm not playing a video game.
In March of this year, MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred said baseball would undergo some rules changes in 2023. Perhaps most notably, an effort to cut down on the shift. SI staffer Emma Bacciolari joins me to discuss why baseball is taking this step, how to execute it, and whether it's even a good idea. All right, Emma, so obviously the shift has been part of baseball forever, but let's start with what it is and why it works.
Basically, it's just shifting your fielders around the baseball field in a way that you're making it less likely for your opponent to get a hit. The ball tracking data that you have from StatCast, that's not just saying like, oh, this hitter has a tendency to pull the ball or to go to the opposite field. Those are the sort of tendencies you might have always known about. It's letting you know exactly like, here is where this guy hits the ball. Here is where he is most likely to make contact. Here is how he responds to this type of pitch. Here's how he responds in this count. You have such specific data on a hitter's tendencies, on when he's more or less likely to produce a certain kind of contact or a certain kind of hit. And that allows you to know exactly where you want to position your fielders. It's not just like, oh, we're going to shade the second baseman over a little bit because that seems like it might be the thing to do. It's like, no, there's an X percent chance that he's going to hit it exactly to the spot on the field. And with the defensive data that we have on our own team, combining that with this offensive data on your opponent, you can pretty much exactly put together a game plan to set up your fielders in a way that you're going to take away those hits.
Right. You're trying to target where you think the batter is most likely to hit the ball. But the interesting part here and what you wrote about for SI.com is that the use of the shift has really skyrocketed over the last decade. Why is that?
The biggest thing is just data. Like, as you said, this has been around for a while, but it's based on looking at where your opponent is most likely to hit the ball. You might have had an idea of what that was 20 years ago, 50 years ago. Ted Williams famously had shifts used against him, so 70 years ago. But now you have specific data that lets you know. You have StatCast, you have all this ball tracking data, the sort of things that you see used on broadcasts, and that allows you to know with pretty incredible precision what your opponent's tendencies are and how to best position your fielders to make it unlikely for them to get a hit.
Robinson Cano leads off, and he drops down a bunt. It's a perfect one, and he'll have himself a base hit. There's your shift buster.
So as that's really become a bigger part of the game over the last 7 years is how long we've had StatCast and had that data, this is one really big way that teams have been harnessing it and responding.
Right. The preponderance of data here is obviously fueling it. And MLB wants to regulate the shift next season, which we want to get into in a little bit. But in the interim, MLB teams are going out in this blaze of shifting glory, Emma. I know it's still early in the season, but teams are shifting more than ever before, right?
Yeah, they're shifting on 37% of plate appearances, even more against left-handed hitters, which is really, really high.
So 37%, to put that in perspective, that's a massive bump over last season, right? How significant is that? Because over the even just the last 4 years, the shift rate has doubled.
Yeah. So we've seen it over 30% for the last couple of seasons now. But if you're looking at over the last 3 to 4 years, it's, as you said, it's more than doubled, which is pretty profound. That has a, that's something that you can pick up just watching a few games a week, seeing how much more common it is, and that it hasn't sat well with people who are looking at baseball and want to see more action.
Everybody's positioned and bunched up exactly where you know somebody's going to hit it. And now I'm hearing people saying, well, they should just bunt their way on. And I'm not taking my 11-year-old and 13-year-old kid to Dodger Stadium to watch Max Muncy bunt his way on.
So the game of baseball and math have obviously reached this critical point, at least in terms of the shift. And so baseball is trying to get rid of it. And in our show meeting, when I brought this topic up, I expected that most of our producers would say, yeah, get rid of the shift. I hate it. Our team, our production team, universally loves the shift, which kind of blew me away. What do you say about the shift?
I don't mind the shift. I don't know if I'd say that I love it. Sometimes it is annoying when you see what feels like it should be a really well-struck ball. And it, for 90 years, you think that would have just gone through the gap and been a hit, no question. And now it's not. Like, sometimes that's annoying. But for the most part, I like the idea that it's a type of strategy that teams have access to. And hitters also have access to knowing, like, maybe you bunt, maybe you just try to hit it over the shift.
Carpenter against the shift. Nobody there. Why not take two? It'll be the shortest double of his career standing up. Unbelievable.
Like, there are options at your disposal here. It's not like it's automatically removing any potential to get on base. I understand why they're legislating it away, most likely, but I will kind of miss it. And I just like the idea of it being a part of the basic strategy that teams have, you know, in their arsenal to try both to stop guys from getting on base and something that hitters also have to overcome. I think it can be kind of fun and interesting, and I'll miss it a little.
I'm curious what players and managers think about it, because yes, the shift has been around forever, but as we've outlined here, it's really ramped up over the last, you know, 7 to 10 years. Are players and managers ready for this to go away, or do they also still like it?
I think you have kind of a mixed bag. I mean, I think there are a lot of pitchers who love playing in front of the shift because it's making them look better when you have your defense behind you taking away those hits. A lot of hitters, particularly righties who don't get shifted on very much, they don't care so much. Then you have lefties who are seeing it used against them all the time. I mean, you have some hitters, prototypical like lefty power hitter, that see it like almost literally every single at-bat they have. For some of them, that's something they've gotten used to and they've been able to thrive despite it. For some of them, it is kind of annoying and they're ready to see it go.
Now baseball, because it's gotten to this point where it's being used, as you said, especially against left-handed power hitters all the time, baseball's trying to get rid of it, or at least legislate it and restrict it a little bit. But the devil, Emma, as always, is in the details. Explain to people why getting rid of it is so complicated.
The most basic thing here is that baseball positions aren't legislated at all. Like, if you look in the baseball rule book, obviously they have names, but there's nothing in the official baseball rules about where a shortstop has to stand or what makes you a third baseman. It's just, you need to have fielders on the field, and that's it, other than the pitcher and the catcher. Obviously, the rest of that is all left entirely up to a team's discretion. And so there's never been an attempt to define a position, to legislate where fielders can stand. So this is all totally uncharted territory for Major League Baseball. And they came to an agreement this winter with the Players Association to say that the league could regulate the shift for 2023. So we know that they're going to try to regulate it in some fashion, but there are a couple different ways to do that. And because the structure of baseball's rules doesn't really have anything in there right now that makes for an easy adaptation. If it said a shortstop is XYZ, it'd be easier to say, this is what your shortstop has to do. But the rule book doesn't really have that language. And so it's going to have to come up with something totally new.
Yeah, I love this about baseball, where baseball identifies what it thinks is a problem and says, we're going to fix it next year. And then people like you go, how are you going to do it? And they go, don't ask us about that right now. We're not quite sure. Were some of the suggestions that people have floated, two fielders on each side of second base or four players on the infield dirt. Is it as simple as that? Would you pick one of those?
I think the most straightforward one is just having two players on each side of second base. This has been really focused on infield shifts because we see them the most. Teams are also doing a lot more outfield shifting and doing a lot more with four outfielders, which can actually be more effective than the infield shift in some cases. And so if you just say two fielders on each side of second base, well, if you position your four outfielders such that you do have two guys on each side of second, that's still opening up room for that. But then if you legislate it by saying it's just four guys on the infield dirt, well, then you can still do a basic infield shift of moving over your second baseman to have three guys on one side of the infield. So it's not like an insurmountable problem. You can also do a definition that combines those two options, or you could do something else entirely. But it is just a question baseball has never had to answer before, and I'm curious to see how they do it with 8 months to figure it out.
So they've got 8 months, Emma, and bottom line, is this good for baseball? Because you said you kind of like the shift, but is the game better off limiting it?
I think there is a fairly strong case for what you get from limiting it. I think baseball has bigger existential questions about the type of offense it's encouraging, the pace of play. Like when you're talking about baseball as an aesthetic entertainment product, there are a lot of factors that go into that, and this is just one very small piece of it. So I don't think it solves any of these bigger problems that baseball has, but I do think it addresses part of it. I think if it only does a little bit to nudge baseball back to an environment where you're seeing more hits, you're seeing more offense, I think that's a good thing. And I don't think it'll have a profound effect, but if it has a slight effect, that's something, and it makes sense for them to at least look into it.
A little impact could go a long way. This was a wonderful conversation. Read her on SI.com. No shift could stop her. She always hits them where they ain't. Emma Bocellari, thanks for this.
Thanks.
Sports Illustrated Weekly is a production of Sports Illustrated and iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite shows. And for more of Sports Illustrated's best stories and podcasts, visit SI.com. This episode of Sports Illustrated Weekly was produced by Cooper McKim, Jessica Yarmosky, and Isaac Lee, who is also our sound engineer. Our senior producer is Dan Bloom. Our executive producers are Scott Brody and me, John Gonzalez. Our theme song is by Nolan Schneider. Thanks for listening, and if you've stuck around this long, we leave you with this. Did you go to Duke?
I did, yeah.
if I had known that ahead of time, this is like when I found out Cooper was a Giants fan.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.